This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled weekend. Do you have plans or need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to party, sit back with a rich glass of vino, talk about a new film, or reflect on a spiritual journey through the power of song, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. I'm your host, Diane Mack. The second floor of Canal Place will be abuzz this weekend as Rhino Contemporary Crafts Company celebrates its silver anniversary.
It's hard to believe that it's been 25 years and we've seen a lot of amazing artists come through Rhino. It's been one of the most successful arts incubators in the city. A means through which artists have learned how to market their work and how to deal with the public. And many artists have been part of Rhino and then gone on to open their own successful galleries, studios, and stores in the city and around the country.
And Vitrice McMurray is one of them, a Rhino medal artist and publicity director for the nonprofit Fine Crafts Gallery.
Sandra Blair Richardson actually founded Rhino 25 years ago, and Rhino stands for right here in New Orleans, because we are totally New Orleans artists, and we're totally artist-run and operated. Before the storm, we actually had paid managers and other positions, but now the artist, since Katrina, we do everything from the accounting to the mopping and everything in between.
Rhino will showcase its new location, one story down, now on the second floor of Canal Place, with an array of works.
A wonderful assortment of contemporary fine crafts. We have three glass workers, and they do a combination of different styles of glass. We have a brand new member, Ginger Kelly, just voted in last month, who's a glass blower. We have 11 jewelers, and of course, I'm one of them, but our jewelers work in everything from aluminum to gold. We have a new leather worker who's a wonderful retired Indian architect who makes fabulous bags and leather cuffs. And different accessories. We have fiber artists, actually three. We have several ceramic artists doing a wide variety of ceramic work. And we have two metal sculptors. So we have 27 members right now.
The gala celebration will include a live auction to help further the educational activities of both Rhino and KidSmart,
which is a nonprofit organization started by the Junior League, which promotes arts in the school curriculum. And we've done projects with them in the past. We used to be their retail outlet when they had an after-school ceramic program. We'd sell these wonderful plates and bowls and cups done by kids. All the Rhino artists have donated wonderful pieces of work. Most of the businesses in Canal Place have donated great things. Many, many local businesses have made great donations for our auction.
McMurray is hoping you'll join the artist in raising a glass as Rhino celebrates 25 years of fostering interest in Louisiana fine crafts and providing educational opportunities to our local community.
Oh, it's going to be fabulous. We're known for having really great parties.
The festivities kick off Saturday, September 22nd at 6:30 with a preview and cocktail party, followed by a live auction at 7:30. At Rhino Gallery, 333 Canal Street, on the second level of Canal Place. This is a ticketed event. Speaking of raising a glass, do you ever wonder what makes your favorite wines so rich? Well, WWNO's Fred Kasten, who produces The Sound of Books, got some answers when he recently talked with longtime Gourmet Magazine wine editor Gerald Asher about his new collection of essays, A Vineyard in My Glass.
Gerald Asher was a college student in London, majoring in English literature, emphasis on Elizabethan dramatists other than Shakespeare, when he just happened into what became his life's work.
I took a job working in a wine shop from 5 to 7 It was a very convenient time. The guy was going to be going home to have dinner with his children, but it meant that it didn't interfere with any of my classes during the day, and it left my evenings clear. And at the same time, it put a few more pounds in my pocket, which any student needs. And that really got me interested in wine.
Which led Gerald Asher to forsake those Elizabethan dramatists for a deeper study of wine. And that, as it turned out, eventually brought him to writing.
In fact, I dropped out and went to work for a small wine distributor, and from there went on to a wine importer, and then won various bursaries, which took me to study overseas, and there we are. So I've had a career in wine, but out of that, particularly when I came to New York from London, where I'd written about wine, but mostly in the company's literature and so on, I knew Jane Monton, who was the editor of Gourmet, and one day she said to me that she'd like me to do an occasional column for them. And that's really how it started.
Gerald Asher was fortunate enough to have several good editors early on in his tenure at Gourmet, and quickly won the admiration of readers for his erudition, style, wit, and passion writing about wine.
You know, everything changes once you start writing about it, because you've then got to research more carefully, you've got to marshal your thoughts on it, and you're conveying information to other people. Over the course of the years, I did it for 30 years, you gradually learn to how to put things and to entertain at the same time as illuminate.
The Gerald Asher essays collected in A Vineyard in My Glass come largely from his work for Gourmet and constitute a tour of 27 diverse wine regions in France, Italy, Spain, Germany, and California.
They really do illustrate in some way the connection, the relationship between what a wine is and where that wine comes from. Everything that has contributed to make that wine what it is, the culture of the people, the soil, all those kinds of things, what is commonly called terroir. But it's really much broader than that, because wine is the result of where it is, just as a piece of writing is. What you really get from a glass of wine, assuming it is a delicious glass of wine, or what's the point of drinking it, is all these associations of where it's from and what it tells you about the people where it's from and where it leads you to.
Including, if you're paying attention, a host of sense-memory associations.
That very basic thing that we're all taught, that your memory is very much smell and taste associated. Apparently the way the brain works is actually hooks things onto smell. I suppose in some kind of primal way it's very important to us. And I think that when you drink a wine, part of what it should be pulling up is a memory that's associated with that particular taste and smell. Perhaps the same wine that you had in some other place. And it brings that up for you. I think there's a richness to wine that people don't allow themselves to fully enjoy.
A richness likely to be made more accessible thanks to the vivid, fresh, elegant prose in Gerald Asher's highly recommended collection of essays, A Vineyard in My Glass. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
The Sound of Books with Fred Kasten can be heard Wednesday mornings at 7:35. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. Filmmaker Spike Lee spent lots of time documenting New Orleans in the days post-Katrina, resulting in the HBO documentary When the Levees Broke, A Requiem in Four Acts. Today, Lee's latest work, Red Hook Summer, finds the filmmaker back in New York. WWNO producer Thomas Walsh has this appreciation.
Spike Lee wants to get you to talk. Whether it's with your family, your clergyman, or your butcher, Spike's films often want you to start a dialogue with someone who will respectfully listen, consider your opinion, and then share their thoughts with you. His new movie, Red Hook Summer, clearly has this objective in mind. However, Spike doesn't want you to misinterpret the film's most heated moments as being confrontational just for the sake of confrontation.
Here's the thing, I think that there's a word called drama. And when you have drama, it can lead to confrontations. There are a lot of confrontations in my films, but it's not confrontation for confrontation's sake. It's drama. It's how you tell a story. I mean, if people agree with everything in the movie, I mean, what's the... If there's no conflict, no drama, no heads button, then what are we watching? You know, people trying to get what they want and somebody standing in the way or not agreeing with them, there's gonna be some beef.
Red Hook Summer is Spike's latest installment in what he calls the ongoing chronicles of the Republic of Brooklyn. Previous movies like Crooklyn, She's Gotta Have It, and Do the Right Thing all depict a Brooklyn that Spike understands after growing up in New York City's famous borough. And since Spike's never really left the city, he's seen some changes go down in the past 2.5 decades.
Well, the change I'm talking about just don't occur in Brooklyn, my man. That happened all over the United States of America, and this thing is called gentrification, where you have neighborhoods who are one way and prices go up and neighborhoods change. I can speak specifically about my neighborhood, Fort Greene, Brooklyn, where I grew up, and when I was growing up, you know, it'd be maybe the guards would be picked up. Maybe if you called the cops, they would come. But once the clientele changed the neighborhood, you know, the garbage picked up all the time. I mean, when you see young white mothers pushing their kids in a baby stroller 2 o'clock in the morning down 125th Street in Harlem, then that tells you there's police presence there that wasn't there before. But the thing about gentrification, which very few people talk about, there's no discussion or very little discussion about where do people go. They got moved out.
But gentrification isn't the only complex issue addressed in the film. The two main characters, a young boy named Flick, played by Jules Brown, and his estranged grandfather, the good Bishop Rouse, played by Clark Peters, butt heads for a variety of reasons. Flick's a vegan and an atheist from suburban Atlanta whose obsession with his iPad often isolates him from others. Meanwhile, Bishop Rouse preaches the dangers of technology, the value of community, and the power of the Almighty as a road to redemption. When the two actors share screen time together, it's quite interesting to see how a veteran actor such as Peters is able to elevate the performance of Brown, one of the young actors making their big screen debut, found by Spike Lee at his old junior high school.
Everybody understood that these were young people, and so they went out of their way to make them feel at ease and gave them some encouragement and some pointers when they needed it. They had the audition. I brought them back 8, 9, 10 callbacks to make sure. Anytime you're doing something for the first time, you know, it's going to be a growing process. But when people want to learn, there's not a problem. The problems arise when people have never done something before but think they know it all. So I don't work with those people.
And while the majority of the film deals with heavy-handed issues worthy of the front page of the news, Spike's inserted a quick jab of humor into the mix by reprising the role of Mr. Mookie from 1989's Do the Right Thing. Apparently, Mookie and his boss, Sal, have patched things up from the last time we saw them.
When Mookie was very small, his mother told him, "Young man, whatever you do, be the best you can be." And Mookie just come to realization that he's the best pizza delivery man in the world, so why run from that? Mookie has never delivered a cold pizza in his life. Mookie has never delivered a pizza where the cheese all slid to one side. And Sal has evolved, and he saw that, look, you know, majority of my clientele's people of color, you know, it's not hurting me by putting Dr. King next to Frank Sinatra.
I can almost guarantee that you'll want to talk about Red Hook Summer once it's over. After all, part of the fun of seeing movies is to talk about what you loved, what you hated, and what left you wanting more. See it with a close companion so you can easily start a dialogue. After all, that's what Spike Lee intended.
WWNO producer Thomas Walsh. Spike Lee's Red Hook Summer is now screening at the theaters at Canal Place. Are you in the mood for an introspective evening? Well, pianist, singer, and songwriter Salvador Liberto will fill the performance space at the old U.S. Mint with music to uplift your spirit.
I think in some ways this is the music of personal liberation, redemption, and purpose. And it sounds like if you took Elton John and crossed him with George Winston.
That's Salvador Liberto describing his original works for piano. Liberto, an admissions administrator at Loyola University by day, is a husband and father of two young children who has a passion for piano. His goal is to connect with audiences as he takes you on a spiritual journey through stories and song.
I think the theme is home and healing, those two major components. And so that's why you have to combine, I think, the familiar. A lot of folks will be coming to the show, they've never heard my music before. So I really want to set it up for them and talk about what I'm thinking in some of the lyrics and make it very accessible to them. At the same time, I want the show to be improbable. I want them to come and realize that perhaps this isn't something they've heard before. And then when they leave, I want them to say, that was a new experience. If I hit on those two, if I inspire and create that newness, then I think I've done my job, and I think folks will be very pleased.
Liberto, a native New Orleanian, admits he discovered his musical talent later than most professional musicians.
I was about 17 or so, and it's something just my spirit just sort of exploded with the need to express myself musically. And I sat down and started to learn how to play and, quite frankly, learned how to sing around then, although I'd sung in some musicals in high school. I don't think I was very good. And through a lot of work, I was able to get better and better and polish it and get to the point where I could play professionally. In the Jesuit tradition, we talk about exploring the whole person. And so this is just a manifestation of that, I think. This is just a treat to be able to explore my own creativity. It's really about, in some ways, a spiritual practice, in some ways, a growth practice. And it's also something that enables me to connect to others and hopefully raise consciousness, grow consciousness through my music and in some small way help to heal the world.
Liberto has been performing original works for the past two decades in venues across the country. His upcoming concert will feature works from his most recent CD, Now's the Time.
The song Now's the Time, for example, the first lyrics came to me. I don't care if you're young or old. I don't care if you're fast or slow. You still have a calling. Your heart doesn't beat in vain.
I don't care if you're young or old. I don't care if you're fast or slow, you still have a call. Your heart doesn't beat in vain.
I did find that as I was writing songs, they did fall into this theme of purpose, of life's purpose, and this notion of now. You know, now is so essential. We can't do anything about the past. Sitting back there, we can reflect on it, we can learn from it. The future, untenable. We don't know it yet. All we have is now.
Another song that caught my ear was Liberto's Prayer for Rebuilding.
Send us peace, send us open hearts, send us drying eyes and brand new starts. Send us warmth in this winter time of pain and lament. Send us sun, send us rain, but not too much rain. Give us the reasons start again.
I wrote that right after the tsunami in Japan. I'm kind of a weight of the world sort of person. When these things happen in the world, I sort of feel them, and I feel great empathy for the people that suffer through them. thinking about that connected to our experiences here, just in thinking about what our community still has to go through to recover. And so there's a lyric, give us time to learn how to rebuild as one. And so we're moving this oneness theme forward and trying to establish some purpose even in the wake of calamity. It's very easy to say this has happened, this is devastating, but the people who inspired me after Katrina asked the question, now what, and acted on it. And so this song is about the now what.
Pianist, singer, and songwriter Salvador Liberto is hoping to connect with audiences in a concert of reflection and healing at the Old U.S. Mint, 400 Esplanade Avenue, tomorrow night at 8. He will be accompanied by cellist Jack Kraft. And we have a little something extra for you in our Lanyap Corner. Charmaine Neville and Rockin' Doopsie Jr. will headline as the Marketplace at Armstrong Park returns on Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. with local food and craft vendors. It's part of the Jazz in the Park series hosted by People United for Armstrong Park. Each Thursday from September 20th to November 8th, Armstrong Park will become a community marketplace from 3 to 7 p.m. with Jazz in the Park concert starting at 5 p.m. You'll find a mix of food, art, and music. Admission is free. After 43 seasons, the Tokyo String Quartet has announced that this season will be their last. The Montage Fine and Performing Arts Series at Loyola University will present a special farewell performance of the critically acclaimed quartet. In their final New Orleans performance, the Tokyo String Quartet will perform works by Haydn, Bartok, and Mendelssohn. The concert will take place on Friday at 7:30 p.m. in Roussel Performance Hall, corner of St. Charles Avenue and Calhoun Street. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next week at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.